For those who haven't heard the TechNet before, its main purpose is a gathering the clan. Stand by for a second while I correct something here.
Make sure you leave a big space, Dick, so that way you get in.
Yeah, Mike, one of my normal receivers is giving me some trouble, so I had to flip over to the other one. Okay. For those who haven't heard the TechNet before, its main purpose is education. We gather the clan and amateurs help each other learn about this somewhat complicated hobby that combines wireless and computers and all kinds of things. Internet, ILRP, I pronounced it wrong, but you know what I mean. Mel, K2KEY, and Dick, K2RIW, try to act as interlocutors or as moderators to this thing. We let people go in turn to answer these questions. Quite often a person comes in with a fairly complicated question. For instance, for the last three or four TechNets, the main subject of discussion has been high-definition television, or digital television. And thank goodness we've got Eric, KE2EJ, who just happens to be the chief engineer of two local television broadcast stations, who gives us the inside information as to what the world of broadcast is really like. That subject is of great interest to hams because it is my belief inside of many ham radio operators is a frustrated broadcaster, a guy in front of a mic, and he'd love to really be doing it as an occupation. Okay, the way a person signs into the TechNet is to give Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and particularly have to give me your name because I'm so darn forgetful, and the confirming yes. In other words, you'll put yes after it, meaning you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, WS2N, Paul, and yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me a call letters and name at this time. K2RIW listening.
B2RIY, Joe. Yes.
Joe recognized. Anyone else?
Boy, quiet tonight. This is K2KEY. Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas.
Okay, Mel recognized. And Mel, you do have a question for the comment or a comment for the net? That was a joke. Joe, I got your email. We're going to be discussing that quite a bit tonight. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Hello, Charlie.
Okay, that was Kilo Charlie 2 blank. Mostly didn't make it. Make one more attempt. I'll listen on the input.
Kilo Charlie 2 Sierra Yankee Foxtrot. First name is Mike.
Okay, Mike. Sierra Charlie. Sierra Yankee Foxtrot. Kilo Charlie 2. We got you, Mike. A little bit noisy. One last call. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me your call letters, name, and that yes if you do have a question or comment at this time.
BC2, OES, Greg, and no.
Okay, Greg with a no. Let's start off with Joe. Joe, one of the things that I just had a meeting of my friends over in Melville tonight, and we came to an interesting conclusion, and that is, and Eric's going to be correcting me on this, I hope, and that is that a person who goes to the recommended websites, which give you information about, okay, got that receiver corrected, give you information about high-definition television, many people who go to those websites or listen to the programs and so on came to the conclusion that all digital television currently is UHF television. Therefore, the misinterpretation many people have made, and it's not their fault, it's the way the FCC or the National Association of Broadcasters or the CAE, whoever, set it up, leads one to believe that VHF television is going to be abandoned when digital television takes over. Currently, all digital broadcasts, per se, are UHF. Therefore, many people who use over-the-air broadcast with a rooftop antenna are abandoning their VHF antenna and thinking that only a UHF antenna is required for over-the-air broadcast. If I understand correctly, I'm going to pass it over to Eric in a second. If I understand correctly, many, if not all, of the major television broadcasting networks on February 17th will be switching back to VHF television for one of their channels, frequency-wise, of digital television. I'm pretty sure that Channel 2 is going to be doing it, Channel 7, 8, 7, 9, 11, and 13. I'm reasonably sure the current VHF channels will, after February 17th, become VHF digital channels. Therefore, for a person who does over-the-air broadcast reception with an antenna on the roof, will desire VHF reception. Let's see if I've got that correct. Eric, you want to give me the last word on that. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KE2RIW, KE2EJ. That's not entirely correct, but it is correct. And it depends upon location, and it depends upon the engineers or the powers to be at the particular broadcast station. As an example, in New York, there will not be anything on Channel 2, there will not be anything on Channel 3, or even Channel 4, or even Channel 5. There will be a Channel 7, a Channel 8, believe it or not, a Channel 9, a Channel 11, and a Channel 13, which will all be high VHF. No one in the New York City area had elected to go back to their original branding. What most stations will do is they will go with their current branding. We have a gentleman with us who's from Texas, and he can tell you there are stations on the low V's, and they have chosen, for whatever reason they have chosen, there are reasons not to choose the very low V's, and there are very good reasons to choose the high V's. So it is really something that was up to the station whether or not they wanted to continue their branding. If they had been known as Channel 7, they can go back to their Channel 7. Now, the interesting part about digital television is that you can be on a UHF, whereas in New York City area, in Long Island, and our neighbors in New Jersey, all operate on UHF frequencies. Let me let it drop. And what they do within the stream itself, they put their original branding channel. So they will be known as Channel 2 on your DTV set, but in reality, they'll be Channel 30. Back to you, Dick, K2RW, K2J.
Okay, so to restate what I think Eric has just said, low VHF channels 2 through 6 will not exist in the New York City area, although I think we're going to find out from Kent in a minute that they might very well exist in his area. You've heard me often talk about my buddy in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I believe he has signed in tonight by way of IRLP and made that system, that link work. And I'm going to pass it over to Kent in a minute. He lives near Dallas in Texas, where the majority of the broadcasting takes place on a place called Cedar Hill. There's a mesa near Dallas where essentially all of the 1,000-foot-high broadcast transmitting towers exist, and that's where the television in that area comes from. And I think almost every one of their channels is now filled up. And their particular local Channel 2 has just recently made a significant investment in reestablishing equipment of a high quality, capable of both analog and digital television, if I understand correctly. And I think it's either an 800 or 1,000 foot high tower. So Kent, if you're there, WA5, Victor, Juliet, Bravo, give us a couple of words on what you know about what will take place after February 17th, 2009, with reference to analog switching over to digital television in the Dallas area. Will there be channels 2 through 13, VHF low or VHF high, being used for digital television, if you happen to know? WA5DJB to Tegan, our guest from out of town tonight, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, Kent. Okay, maybe Kent got called away, and maybe we'll have to talk to Kent later. Joe did mail me, I can't forget what brand name it was now, of WineGuard, I think it was. You mailed me pictures of quite a few of the WineGuard antennas that are candidates that you're thinking of buying that have both VHF and UHF capability. We now know that only the upper VHF is required, channel 7 through 13, and for the time being, it looks like in the New York City area, from what Eric just told us, channels 2 through 6 will not be used, although I think there's a slim possibility some of that might change. And as I studied those individual antennas, I know the question you've asked me, Joe, is which one of those five different antennas should you buy? And there's no clear answer for that. In theory, the bigger the antenna you buy, the higher the gain the antenna, the more narrow the beam width, and on the assumption that you're using a rotator, you're then able to solve the problem of the best possible digital television reception. And let me tell you the difference about that. I'm going to drop for a second. In the case of ordinary analog television, most of the time we would aim an antenna for the strongest possible signal, and that usually gives you the best reception. In the case of digital television, the strongest possible signal is probably the right direction to go, but it may not be the best reception. The nature of the digital television is such that it has a bit of difficulty tolerating multipath. In other words, you've got a real signal coming directly from your, in our case, mostly Empire State Building, directly to your house. That's the direct channel. You're also getting a multipath signal that reflects off the water tower, reflects off the apartment building that's across the street from you. It could even be behind you as well as in front of you, or off to one side, a hill off to one side, and so on. All of these extra reflected signals, the multipath signals, must travel a longer path. Therefore, they're delayed in time. A delayed in time signal, when you're watching analog television, simply gives you a ghost image that is displaced to the right. Something like 63 nanoseconds per horizontal sweep. Therefore, each 6.3, is it nanoseconds or microseconds? I think it's microseconds. Each 6.3 microseconds of delay will display the ghost image at 10% of the screen width. That's what happens with analog television. And the ghosting, there are many people watching over the broadcast with analog television right now, getting a significant amount of ghost. They've learned to tolerate it. In the case of individual systems, it's information being transmitted that the signal lays on top of the previously transmitted digital signals and creates something that's called interstitial distortion, interdigital distortion. And so the adapter network, the equalizer function that's in the, generation 3, 5, or 7, whatever it is, digital converter that you're using in your set or in your separate box, it has to take out those individual delays and put that signal all back together again. So if you have the ability to aim a high-gain antenna in various directions, a little bit to the left or the right of, let's say, the Empire State Building, you may very well be able to choose a direction where the combination of signal strength and multipath signals will make your digital receiver happier.
And repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
And you'd like to find that magic direction which makes best possible reception for digital television reception on each of your channels simultaneously with one setting. I think the chances of that are a little bit slim unless you're in a pretty good area. The average person is going to find out that one setting of the antenna direction will be great for channels 2 through channel 7 through 13, and another direction might be required for the lower UHF channels, and maybe a third direction for the upper UHF channels. You're likely to find something along those lines. That's a guess on my part, but with Eric's correction, we'll find out is that likely from what his experiments have found. He's got a directional antenna on his broadcast tower. He aims it in various directions in order to get digital television reception. Now, with reference to the five individual plates that you mailed me, Joe, there's another problem, which I'll get into on my next transmission. But there's another problem when it comes to selecting which is the best antenna for you. Let me turn it back to Eric first to update and amplify what I just said. KE2EJ, K2LIW on the TechNet.
All right, K2RIW, K2EJ. Kent was actually trying to come back to us. He didn't go away. But it seems like with Echoline, the carrier to repeater is going to have to drop first before you can hit the transmit button. So let's give a space in there. We'll let the 375 machine drop and see if he can join us. So just stand by for a second.
Okay, KQRIW, WA5BJV in the TechNet. Yes, here in the Dallas area, At the moment, we only have one HT station on VHF and nine NTSC on VHF. After the transition, we'll end up having three on VHF. All the rest of the 29 are on VHF. We tend to run a lot more power since we don't have quite the code channel interference that you would have from other states. Most of the UHF stations running NTSC are in the 5 megawatt class. The majority of the transmitters are at, as you mentioned, the Cedar Hill Antenna Farm. It's about 300 feet higher than the Dallas area, which is a little bit for us. And all of the towers are 1,840 feet tall. That's as high as the FAA will let them go. And I think we have 11 towers in the 1,840-foot class. So it's been certainly an interesting transition. And as I was talking to Eric, it's the government being here to help you. Over.
Wow. Only 11 towers, 1,840 feet tall, on this little 300-foot mesa called Cedar Hill, outside of Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Wow. By our standards, that's a lot of tower and a lot of them. Really, really impressive to me. And I'm amazed that that much hardware has been invested into television broadcast. So, I think you're saying one of the VHF channels, 2 through 13, is on digital television right now, and I'm guessing from what you said, Kent, that some number of those might go from the current UHF assignment where they're transmitting digital television over to back to a VHF assignment for digital television after February 17th. I may have that a little bit mixed up, but that's what I think you're saying. But let me give you one other piece of information here for Joe. I'm going to drop for a second. And that is, Joe, when I looked at those five antennas that you mailed me a plate of, and when I looked at the data sheets, I realized that even though it's a respected brand name of television aerial, there's a bit of advertising hyperbole going on here. As I've said, what has happened in many amateur radio antennas, and it's certainly happening when it comes to television broadcast antennas, quite frequently the gain of the antenna is set in the advertising department, not in the measurement laboratory. Quite often, two different brands will have a somewhat similar antenna, and one will claim a dB or two higher gain for the exact same antenna so that people will buy that antenna. The reason I know that's taking place is that on that data sheet, there's usually a spreadsheet on each one of your five plates that you mail me where they told you the beam width of the antenna as well as the claimed gain at the various channels. And beam width of an antenna and the possible gain is a necessary but not sufficient. In other words, if my antenna truly has 10 decibels of gain, I don't know the exact number, but let's assume that a 10 dB gain antenna has a 40 degree beam width. So, if the antenna in question claims 10 decibels of gain over dipole, and if the antenna has 40 degrees of beam width, if I had the math correct, those two numbers play together, and yes, 10 dB of gain is possible. However, if the manufacturer is telling you he's got 10 dB of gain, but not 40 degrees of beam width, but 50 degrees of beam width, he's then in the area where he's beyond the laws of physics. He cannot do that. You're about to ask me, how do you actually do this calculation? And that is, if you assume that your antenna is doing most of its transmitting in the main lobe, and not too much of the energy is going into the side lobes or back lobes, if you make that assumption, if the antenna was perfect, then the magic number would be 41,253. Because there's always some energy in the side lobes and back lobes, the magic number people use is either 30,000 or 35,000. I like to use 35,000. So 35,000 is the magic number that allows you to do the conversion. You take the horizontal beam width in degrees, the vertical beam width in degrees, multiply them together, divide them into 35,000.
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
After you multiply them together and divide them into 35,000, That is the real gain number, is a hard number of what that antenna is capable of doing. Necessary, but not sufficient. That's the minimum requirement in beamwidth versus the possible gain, so to speak. And that number you get is a hard number to convert it into decibels. You take the log of it to the base 10 and multiply by 10. So 10 times the log of 35,000 divided by horizontal beamwidth times vertical beamwidth, close parentheses. I should have said open parentheses after the word log. I'll repeat that now. So gain possibility of an antenna in decibels equals 10 times log, L-O-G, open parentheses, 35,000 divided by horizontal beamwidth times vertical beamwidth, they're both in the denominator, close parentheses. That's a general formula for telling you what an antenna is capable of doing. When I plug that formula into the beamwidth of some of those antennas, particularly the higher gain antennas that were on the plates you mailed to me, the numbers don't ring true. So something is wrong. They've either made a mistake in telling us what beamwidth, or they've made a mistake in telling us what gain. In general, if the manufacturer has done a good job, the bigger antenna with the longer boom, with the more number of elements, with good design and a little bit more dollars of expense, usually is a higher gain antenna with higher performance. Therefore, connecting it with a rotator on the roof of your house should do exactly what you want it to do. And there's some exceptions to that. Occasionally, the slightly smaller antenna actually is a higher performer. And even if that's true, maybe it's only true on one or two of the channels, not on all of the channels. So, you pay your money, you take your choice. Your real question is, which one of those five antennas should you buy? And my only answer to that one is, you're going to get better and better performance. You're going to be able to do... Let me drop.
Well, you too, TTJ.
Gordon recognized. You're going to be able to do more and more television DXing as you buy a bigger antenna with a better preamplifier and mount it at a higher altitude with a good rotator. As you make more and more investment, you're going to get more and more performance in range, direction capability, and so on, your ability to avoid multipath. Now, Gordon, as I remember, I think you've told us, Gordon, you've got already digital television in the New Jersey area. You're pretty happy. You might want to tell us a little bit about how you chose which VHF/UHF antenna to use, what rotator, what altitude, and what do you see from New Jersey. Whiskey 2, Tango, 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 the guy who runs the TechNet in New Jersey, K2LIW in the TechNet. You got it, Gordon.
Well, no, actually, I use Verizon Fios. I cheat. I mean, I've done some off-air testing and stuff like that by copying my 2-meter antenna and my 6-meter antenna and my 432 antenna. And that's kind of interesting. That actually works pretty well, amazingly enough. And you're in a better position to explain why. I just want to say good evening. I just got out of church a little late. I'm not going to be here very long, but I will be listening the whole net. But I heard Kent in there, and I just wanted to pass along my greetings to Kent, and Merry Christmas to him, and also it's nice hearing his voice when he's not leaving a message about a friend in the hospital. It's very nice to hear that. Anyway, so back to you, K2RAW2GGG.
This is K2KY. I got an interesting question, Dick.
Go right ahead, Mel. Thank you, Gordon. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay. I also want to say hello to Kent. I haven't spoken to him for a while. And Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whichever one you celebrate, Kent. And I'll tell you, Dick, I don't understand something. I put this box, this DTT, was it 901 or something, the Zenith box, on the TV here. Now I'm getting channel 4. I'm getting channel 4, 1, and channel 4, like 2, and the channel 4, 3. Channel 4, 1 seems to be the same broadcast that you see on channel 4 without the box, in other words, bypassing it. Now, what is this channel 2, channel 4, 2, and channel 4, 3? Channel 4, 2 looks like all weather. Where is that actually being, is that in the UHF I'm picking it up, or exactly how am I really receiving this stuff, Dick? I'm getting about 25 channels, Dick, over.
I'll give you an explanation. Okay, I knew you would. Go right ahead, Eric.
Okay,
first of all, Mel, if you look at the box, it says 4.1, 4.2, and 4.4. It doesn't say 4.3. See, you normally would associate a channel number with an RF frequency, and we don't do that anymore, okay? What we have is really a box that, think of it as you use your computer. And you have this thing called the Internet, which comes over Ethernet. And what it really is a stream of data. And in that stream of data, I can put many different bits of information. Now, if you've used your computer to play a video or listen to an MP3, it's that same serial stream, okay, but actually the Ethernet is broken up into stuff called UDP. There's all sorts of acronyms, but think of it this way. Think of it as a serial stream where every piece of information has a header or an identification packet, all right? Now, in digital television, we actually transmit packets that have 188 bytes of information. And for the first couple of periods of time, we send a header of a specific value, which really says, this is a video for channel 4.1. And then there's another header that comes along and says, this is a sound for channel 4.1. And interleaved in there with another 188 bytes of data, there could be a header that says, this is the video or the picture for channel 4.2. And somewhere in there is another bit of data that says, this is the sound for channel 4.2. Also, you'll notice on your box that it has a guide. And somewhere in that stream, there's another header that says, this is what's on at 10:30. This is what's on at 11:30. And it has those datas. So it's really you're dealing with one RF channel, but a stream of data, which has many different bits of data in it. Let me do that graph again. And if you've ever played a DVD which has multi-angles, whereas you can actually, you look on your DVD remote control, there's an angle button, whereas there's some DVDs, not too many, I've actually made a couple, where you actually can have different camera views of the same thing. The DVD is pretty much exactly the same as what you're transmitting through the digital television. It's the same stream format. Whereas that even on the DVD, that single stream has a packet header that says, this is a video for camera angle one, or this is a video for the movie that you're watching. And then comes along after another, believe it or not, 188 bytes, it might say that this is the sound for the picture that you're watching. And then maybe if you've seen the subtitles, you turn the subtitles on, there's another bit of data that says this is the subtitle information. So that's how you see the multiple stuff. And on NBC, you have the main channel, which is 4.1. 4.2 is what they call Weather Plus. And 4.4 is usually a replay of the news, and sometimes they'll put other programming on it. But you see it as an additional channel, but it's all coming over the same RF frequency. Back to you, Dick.
I want to ask a question. But you say the RF frequency. Is that still on the original channel 4 RF frequency, Eric? Over.
Yeah, that's my real question, Eric. Is that on channel 4 analog 60-72? If he watches at 11:45 at night, Jay Leno on channel 4 analog television, between 66 and 72 megacycles. Are you telling us that they're squeezing the exact same frequency region, they're squeezing in the 4.2 and 4.4, or is the 4.2 and 4.4 coming from a UHF frequency? Over to you, Eric.
Okay. When you're watching channel 4 analog, you're at the low VHF channel 4 frequency. When you're watching channel 4 digital, you're actually receiving the frequency that's allocated for channel 28. By the way, I have the final list of frequency allocations here in front of me. In New York, there will be channel 7, 11, and 13. Channel 9 did not elect to move back to channel 9. They're going to stay on 38. So the New York City stations are after the 17th, will be 7-11-24, which is actually 25. They're staying put. 28, which is NBC, they're staying put. 31 is actually, currently, their digital is on 30, but they moved back to 31. 33 is CBS, is where CBS is going to go. And 44 is Fox, or Channel 5, as you know it. If you watch Channel 21 Analog, we currently transmit on 22, but after the 17th, we'll be transmitting back on 21 again. So the actual RF frequencies, no, you cannot have an analog and a digital on the same frequency. That doesn't work. Although, interestingly enough, on 13 and 21 a year ago, we were transmitting a digital stream for a pay-per-view box, which used a small portion of the RF spectrum of actually Channel 13 and 21 analog. And if you look very carefully at the picture, you would see a herringbone that was generated from it, but we no longer do that. Back to you, Dick. K2RW, KE2J.
Will you 2 TTQ the question?
Gordon recognized, but I've got a question first on just what I heard, and that is, if I've got a modern-day digital television receiver connected to an antenna on the roof of my house, and if I had the ability to tell the set, I just love analog today, December 28th, I want to watch Channel 4, which is 66 to 72 megacycles, in analog, and right now I want to watch Jay Leno at 11:45 at night. So if the set would obey my command, in analog reception, it would be listening to 6672 Ordinary National Television Selection Committee, NTSC, analog type transmission. If I then tell that television set, I want to watch Channel 4, Jay Leno, 11:45 at night, I want to watch it in digital, then I can watch 4-1, 4-2, and 4-4, and that digital stream is coming from what used to be called, or is now called, UHF channel 28. So my first question, Eric, is what I said accurate, and will a modern television set with digital capability have enough menus in there that for the time being I can say, I want to watch analog, I want you to go over to the old analog channel for the time being? K2EJ, K2LIW.
K2RW, K2EJ. That is actually correct. What you would do on many TV sets is you would ask for channel 4.0. And that says, I want the analog. But how does the TV know that? How does it know where the digital is and where the analog is? That's the question. Well, actually, all the receivers have what you call a scan function. The first thing that you do is you scan before you get any reception. And when you do that, what actually happens is that I see we've locked out the time for him to hear us. And let me let the whole system drop so that way Kent can continue to hear us. Stand by a second.
Dick, K to KY, can I ask you a question?
Let the whole system drop, Dick. Okay, it's back. What the receiver does is it scans and it actually searches for analog and digital signal, stores it in memory, and also in the digital stream, when it looks at it, it finds out that it's associated with channel 4. It finds out it's associated with channel 2. Back to you, and then let Mel ask his question.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to keep this fair. I'm gonna let Gordon go first, and then Mel in that order. Gordon, you had a question. W2 Tango 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 KQLAW.
Yeah, really quick. What are the protocols used to move 188 byte packet of frame of data? What's the bearer protocol and what's the content protocol? That's what I wanted to know, Eric.
If I understand correctly, Eric, Gordon is asking, what is the protocol used for transmitting the packet of data? And I think we're getting into the 8VSB, the Trellis, the Viterbi, not Viterbi, yeah, the error correcting code, the MPEG. I don't know how much of that he wants to know, but give it a try, Eric. Go ahead.
All right. The protocol that's used is actually generated by the ATS, the American Television Standard Committee. And the protocol is called PSIP, or Program System Information Protocol. And if you're really interested in seeing how it's made and what it's built of, out of, go to ATSC.org, and you want to take a look at A54, which spells out the entire system. That protocol has nothing to do with the ABSB and the RF and the trellis and all of that stuff. That is part of what we call the elementary stream, which is the video information, and the actual part that that protocol is contained in is called the transport stream. Back to you, Dick.
That's my question. I wanted to know about PSIP and A54. Thank you.
Okay, sounds like Gordon is happy. I hope so. We're hearing some dropouts there. Mel, I'm sure you've got about five questions. K2KEY, K2LIW. Ain't it nice and simple, our new television? You got it, Mel.
No, I'm a little curious about a couple of those protocol operations. All right, another question. Right now, you say when we're looking at Channel 4, I put on this Zenith box, and I see Channel 4. I'm still looking at it in the 66 megahertz region. As of February, will I have to reboot this box again, Eric? In other words, where I just reset it, or will it automatically, in other words, Channel 4 is not going to be at 66 anymore. It's going to be somewhere up in, the UHF zone. So is the box automatically going to go to that, or will we just reset it again, Eric, over?
You let me...
All right, first of all, the box, if you've got a Zenith box, a 901, that has an analog path through. So when you turn the box off and you tune your regular TV to channel 4, you get channel 4, your analog TV that will tune to 56 megahertz. The digital stuff, okay, the digital stuff actually is on 28. Now, in the case of channel 4, actually you wouldn't have to do anything because it's going to continue to be on 28. But the reality is everyone will have to rescan their boxes. They will have to hit the scan button in order for them to find where everyone moved to, because not everyone's staying in the same place. So on the 17th, and that's what a lot of the phone calls are going to be, when people call up and say, I can't get your station anymore. They must rescan on the 17th, at least once.
Here's my question along those lines, though, Eric. In order to get analog television right now, the digital external box, converter box, has a pass-through function, either by asking it for pass-through or unplugging it. If Mel asks for 4.0 today, I think he gets 66 to 72 megacycle analog reception today. If he asks for 4.1, 4.2, or 4.4, I think he's really getting UHF reception, channel 28, which is somewhere around 600 megacycles, and he's digitally receiving those channels on one single frequency. Channel 28 is getting those three channels of information right now. Is the information I just said somewhat accurate? Over to you, Eric.
All right, just let me clarify one thing. Of all the boxes, these converter boxes that they're selling, the converter boxes do not, I repeat, do not have analog reception in them, okay? What they mean by pass-through is there's a relay in it, and the early boxes didn't have them. And a lot of people complain because there's still a lot of low-power television stations that will continue to be operating analog for the next 3 years. Okay, there's also translators around the country that will actually be receiving their digital signals and converting them to analog and retransmitting, rebroadcasting them analog. So these cheap converter boxes do not receive analog television. So you cannot say, tune to channel 4.0. What you can do is turn the thing off. If it happens to be like the 901 will pass the analog, whereas the TTT900, if you remember, we talked about that a while back, that does not have the relay. So there you would need an AB switch or a splitter, okay, because the boxes produce their regular NTSC output on channel 3, which is what you're going to tune your set to in order to watch it, or take the video out. So if you're using the video and you want to watch analog, you have to disconnect it and go use the tuner in your TV set in order to see it. On the more expensive receivers, which have analog and digital tuners in them, there you can say tune to channel 4.0, and it will tune to 56. And then you say tune to 4.1, it'll tune to about 600 and whatever megahertz channel 28 is.
Okay, did that make some sense, Mel? K2KEY? K2LIW?
Yeah, Roger, I figured you're most likely going to have to rescan it. All right. Boy, oh boy, this is going to be a real mess. I don't even want to think what's going to happen, Dick. I think we're going to have a lot of chaos because right now there's a lot of complaints around here. The flooding, I have a friend that works over at the Senator Kruger's office here, and that's the local senator here, and these people are coming in every day, you know, figuring, I don't know what he's going to do about it, and they're crying, literally crying that they, you know, like I said, they had this place here, they were selling the boxes, and they were doing it for, I guess, the senior citizens volunteering to install them and everything. They can't get them to work, half of them, I understand, Dick, over.
WS2N, question.
Paul, Paul recognized. Who was the other person besides Paul who wanted to ask a question? Okay, go ahead with your question, Paul. Just to be sure, let the machine completely drop.
Okay, very good. Now, I'm curious what's going to happen after the 17th. Everybody rescans their box, and they're all happy. And now they decide to go out and buy an HD TV. And now they have their antenna in their box, and everything's working fine. Are these people going to have to go out and buy a new box to get HDTV? I wonder if that's, or are they separate, or are they going to start selling separate boxes now for that? And then, if they are those boxes going to be able to take an HD signal and put it into an older TV if they decide to switch back again for maybe a different room or something? How's that all going to work? Are they going to have separate boxes now? Back to you, Dick. Maybe Eric knows.
It's nowhere near that bad. Let's let the machine completely reset. Guys, got to let the carrier drop. Okay. Let me explain one thing. Okay, what you're watching on these boxes now, okay, if you have a conventional analog TV set, it does not display anything except 525 lines interlaced, okay? That picture is actually 480 lines, and it's displayed as two segments of 262 and a half lines. You're going to think of the whole thing with the sync pulses. That's what you currently watch, okay? There is no way in heck that display will display 1,000 lines. It will display 525 lines. The boxes that you're buying now are actually tuning to pictures that could be what they call 1080i, or 1,080 lines, or 720 lines. Actually, there's 36 different flavors of standards. And what those boxes do is they convert whatever it sees coming in, puts it into a frame memory, and then reads it out as 525 lines so that your TV set can display it. If you go out and buy an HD TV set, okay, that is capable of displaying 1,080 lines, then, of course, you don't need a converter box unless, of course, you bought one a bunch of years ago and it didn't have a tuner in it. But in that case, you would have bought a tuner which outputs 1,080 lines, and you will see a high definition picture. On those converter boxes, what they will do is they will display that high definition picture, and you have a choice of displaying it as letterbox, or you can fill up the whole screen and lose the pictures on the edge, or you can squeeze it and make everybody look skinny. So even though those converter boxes are converting, that's what they do, they convert from the high definition picture and they down-res it to a standard definition picture.
So unless you go out and buy a TV set that's capable of displaying 1,080 lines, you don't have to do a thing.
So as I see it, Paul, there is no so-called digital converter box that you buy today and a different one later. And if you buy a modern television today, it must have a digital capable tuner in, which essentially does everything. Analog reception of the real Channel 4 that we know about, as well as the new digital television reception of Channel 4.1, 4.2, and 4.4, as a for instance, which really are UHF Channel 28, but in order to keep everything nice and simple for you, there's a header on the digital information coming from that Channel 28 saying that this is NBC-related material, therefore if you tell the screen and tell the watcher of this set that it's 4.1 and 4.2 and 4.4, he will understand what it means, and we're not going to bother troubling him with that extra information that it's really coming from Channel 28. So it's sort of by way of the headers and the information being told to the logic in your set, it all comes out right. So it looks to me like the worst that'll happen after February 17th, when the so-called analog channels today become digital, is that you might have to go to the re-scan function of either your external box or your television set, one or the other. You might have to go to the re-scan function so it finds out where is everybody today, frequency-wise, and which ones are using VHF, which ones are using UHF, and what should we call it. You might have to do a re-scan function to refine so the set re-acclimates itself to the new environment. The environment's going to change on February 17th. I wonder if that's somewhat agreeable, what I just said to Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, I would correct one thing. Not you might have to. You will have to. You absolutely must do it, or you're not going to find everything, because some of the channels are moving. And here's one for Kent. I'm looking through the final election of Texas, and the lowest channel I see them using is Channel 5 in Fredericksburg, and that's the lowest one. In Dallas, the lowest one that I see is 8. So let's let Kent come in there and say a few words. In order for him to do that, we have to let the carriers drop. So K2RIW, K2J.
Before we do that, when you say the lowest one is 8 and whatever in Dallas, this is after February 17th, not now. I think there might be an experimental digital transmission going on in Dallas right now. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, after the transition we're talking about. We're not talking about currently. And we really should stop saying an experimental transmission because there are no experimental transmissions. Everybody is transmitting digital. Well, almost everybody is transmitting digital. It's only those that have money problems that might not be, and they're probably going to be in big trouble in the end. So I give it back to you, Dick, and let's pass it over to Texas and see what he has to say. Just remember to let you got to let 375 drop or he can't pick it up.
Roger, Dodger.
Okay, back to Texas, WA5BJB. Well, here in this area, we have one digital channel on VHF today. It came online in 1999. It was the first full-time digital transmitter to stay online here in the Dallas area and was used for a lot of experimentation on propagation. To give an idea for the differences in coverage, UHF stations are running 5 megawatts ERT. Channel 9 plugs in the wall. Well, it's 4,000 watts solid state, and so it kind of looks like plugging in a dryer vent, but it's a 4,000 watts on VHF digital goes as far as a megawatt on UHF, and that's the main reason they're moving back down. Channel 6 is currently analog with a UHF channel. They will be moving the digital back to Channel 6. Channel 8 will continue transmitting their digital on Channel 9. Channel 11 will be moving their digital from 19 back to 11. Yes, some interesting things here. This all goes back to the 1994-1996 time frame when Congress decided to sell off 28 TV channels. The idea was to take the analog stations off of 28 channels, move them all to the low end of UHF, and then sell off the spectrum. Well, then that later got reduced to only 16. But that's how they balanced the budget in the 1990s, is by selling off supposedly 26 channels, and in the budget proposals they said this will raise $1 trillion for the U.S. government by selling the spectrum. Well, the electronics industry in North America doesn't have $1 trillion. So it didn't quite work out that way. The auction just went through, and it raised $19.2 billion, excuse me. So they move thousands of TV stations, make everybody make a new TV set, and they raise $19.2 billion. WA5BJB.
Wow. So, to repeat that, they intended on the reselling of those frequencies in the 700 megacycle region, if I understand correctly, to raise $1 trillion. They raised and said $19.2 billion. That's $0.0192 trillion. In other words, 19.2, let me think now. No, 1.9%, less than 2%. They got 2% of the money they anticipated. Eric, I'm hearing a little bit of static on Ken's signal, WA5EJB. I'm also hearing the static when I listen on the 147.375. I presume he is coming over the 147.375 by way of VOIP, a digital network. So I'm a little bit curious as to where the RF sound of noise seems to be coming from. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
All right, K2RIW, K2J. I'm actually going to change the way the system works, but currently, his signal at hitting 375 is actually coming out of NTSGU's house. He's been gracious enough to set up an EchoLink node. So the RF, his audio is actually going RF in Sayville, which is not that far from the repeater, but the repeater seems to have some antenna issues that I haven't put my finger on yet. Andy and I were listening to it earlier. It wasn't as bad as we're hearing it now. For some reason, it's gotten worse, but what I'm intending to do is to turn the IRLP node that we're using now into what's known as a Echo IRLP node. Well, what I might even do is put an EchoLink node here that's aimed into the system via another link system that we've got going together. As soon as Andy gets a couple more radios together and we get that up and running, we'll probably hook that in. I understand Kent's reasoning for not going directly into an IRLP node. He doesn't want to tie up a repeater down there for the duration of the TechNet. You know, that's his choice to do that. And so, you know, EchoLink is a good way, whereas he's not dealing with anybody on the air in Texas, so it works out good for him. But, you know, we'll iron the bugs out, and it'll be fine. I mean, it used to work a lot better than it did. Actually, a couple of hours ago, it was working much better than it is now, but we'll get to that. And just for your information, the current TPOs of the VHFs on Empire. I'm going to drop for a second. What I mean by TPO is transmitter power output that will actually, after going through the system and dealing with the loss, which gives them the effective ERP in the end, the actual transmitter TPOs for channel 13 is going to be 2.4 kilowatts. 2.4 kilowatts. On analog, we generally pump about 25 kilowatts into the pipe. The pipe goes through a set of combiners, a series of cavities, makes its way up to the top of the Empire State Building, where there is actually an 8-bay set of bat wing antennas made by Dielectric, which some other folks have had big trouble with, but we don't really seem to have the problem because have a switch on, and what we're thinking of doing is running a slightly higher TPO and only using the 4 instead of 8, which gives us a little bit broader. I think it's going to work out better in terms of, you know, angle of radiation for DTV. Just like I want to use my side mount antenna, which only has 13 dB gain at channel 21, as opposed to using the one on the top, which is 17 dB gain. So, you know, we can. There's a lot of people arguing about that stuff, but I just think it's better. But that's my own opinion. K2IW, K2JO. By the way, the TPO for channel 21 will be 4.7 kilowatts. And if we get maximization, it'll probably come up to about 6.5 or 7 kilowatts.
Interesting.
WHYY.
Go ahead, Joe. And by the way, Joe, give us a couple of words as to how you're getting your audio into this. Joe is the first guy who I think signed in with IRLP. When it comes to people really out of town, so to speak, signing into the TechNet, I think Kent, WA5EJB, may be the first. We'll find out pretty soon. But how are you getting your audio to us, Joe? Are you going into an IRLP mode or you, node, or are you going into 147.375? To B2RYY, K2RYW.
I have my own node, which is 4148, tied to my repeater on 448.175, and that's how I'm going into your system. You're tied to a reflector right now. It's reflector 9126, which is like a party line. Everybody can talk and receive on that, only one at a time. But that's not why I broke in here. I broke in here because you still didn't get to ask my original question, which I signed in for today. You assumed it was about the antennas, but that was not correct.
Okay, you've got the floor. You're the first guy who signed in. Go right ahead with your real question. And don't make it too technical. That was a joke. KQRIW.
Okay. I do have a digital converter box. A friend of mine had given me one about a week or so ago, and I had a chance to hook it up and play around and see what I could actually get off the air. Now, Eric just mentioned a couple of channels. I was just, he talked a little too fast, and I couldn't get all the information, but that's not what my question is. My question is, how susceptible these boxes or these type of receivers are going to be to outside noise type of interference? Is there any, has anybody ever done any kind of signal-to-noise ratio tests on these type of things to find out what they can actually, how they actually perform receiving a digital signal off the air compared to ambient noise like power line noise or something else across the particular frequency they're receiving?
Okay, you got it, Eric.
All right. Actually, there's been a lot of extensive studies in the lab and in the field specifically about that issue. There is a minimum signal noise that must be achieved in order for you to get a picture. The digital transmitters and the digital receivers experience something that we call the cliff effect. There's a point in threshold where that if you go underneath that, nothing works. If you go above that, it works perfectly. And actually, there is a value. It is a signal noise ratio of a minimum of 27 dB. Okay, most transmitters are only capable of producing between 32 and 36 dB signal of noise. The ATSC Zenith, when it was still an American company, actually, before it was bought by LG, had, in the lab, created the various different types of terrestrial noises that you would expect to experience. The number one killer of both our method of transmission, which is ADVSB, and the European method of transmission, which is COFDM, is impulse noise. Think about it. You're transmitting bits. The bits occur, actually, the symbols occur every 92 nanoseconds. So these are very short duration pulses, in essence, is what we're looking at. And if you confuse it by putting an extra little spike in there, it doesn't demodulate. So, yeah, the problems of terrestrial noise occur especially at the lower frequencies, like power line noise, stuff like that. That's why you'll find throughout most of the country there are no channel 2s, 3s, 4s. 5 is like kind of, you know, getting there. But when it comes to VHF, most people are doing 7, 6, 7 and above. But, yeah, a lot of work has gone into that.